with you. Tell me, baby, can I have my way with you? Tell me, baby, can I have my way with you? Tell me, baby, tell me, baby, can I have my way with you?
I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and today we are speaking with Randy Terran. She is the founder and CEO of the global organization Project Happiness. As the producer of an award-winning documentary on the nature of happiness, she facilitated interviews with George Lucas, Richard Gere, and neuroscientist Richard Davidson. Her best-selling book on happiness became the basis for curriculum in over 120 countries worldwide. She's worked with first ladies, ministers of education, and major thought leaders. For nearly a decade, she served as a board member on the Dalai Lama Foundation and is on the board of the United Nations sanctioned International Day of Happiness. Randy is a master in NLP and is a sought after international speaker on the topics of happiness habits, preventative wellness, and emotional resilience. You can find her at projecthappiness.org. Welcome to the show, Randy.
Thank you so much, Marie. I'm so happy to be here.
Thanks for being with us. So for people who aren't familiar with your work, can you tell us a little bit about Project Happiness? And we're here today to talk about your latest book, Emotional Advantage, Embracing All Your Feelings to Create a Life You Love.
Well, I will start by telling you a little bit about how Project Happiness got started. It wasn't something I was intending to do. It was stemming from a conversation over the kitchen table with my teenager, who said to me, "Mom, I am stressed out. I want to be happy, but I don't know how." So at that moment, oh my gosh, I would have done anything. I was racking my brains out on resources that could help, but of course, nothing resonated. And that began the quest to look for what was out there to help, strategies and so on. So I discovered the science of happiness, which was at a course at Harvard. And the question arose, why is this not available for more people? So that's where everything began. And, we created a film. We created curriculum, a book, and a website, social media to reach adults. So this is a systemic issue. Everyone wants to be happier. And with anxiety rising and the World Health Organization declaring depression to be the greatest source of human suffering globally, wow. This is something that I wanted to pay attention to. And it seems that there is, a conversation that is really emerging on this topic.
Thanks, Randy. Now, it seems like I've been doing this show for 10 or 11 years now. And when I started out, I was really into the law of attraction stuff. And what the underlying message was kind of, maybe it wasn't expressly said in this way, but I think a lot of people got the idea that if you really want a good life, you have to only have positive emotions.
You are so right. And this was a phenomenon. I mean, I remember that. And at the very beginning of our work at Project Happiness, this was a brand new area of happiness, the science of happiness, mindfulness, neuroscience, all this kind of stuff. It's very worthy of looking into. But what I've come to see over the recent, years, I would say, is that more and more people in our community are asking about the other emotions. What about sadness? How do you deal with fear? what happens when anger erupts, you know? We cannot live on the sunny side of the street all the time, even though it would seem that, you know, there's pressure in the media and so on to be, you know, put your best foot forward and be happy all the time. But we're human and we are given this spectrum of emotions for a reason.
And that's the thing, is I think with social media, it's made it that much harder, because we go on social media and we only see the curated filters of what people look like, and they're only on when they're on vacation. And I saw an interview with one woman the other day, and she was saying how she took a bunch of pictures for Instagram, and it's 5 minutes after she was done, she took all the makeup off, because that's not actually how she wants to be in her day. So it's just so far removed from reality. And then we look at that and think that's what happy people are up to.
Yeah, we need to be more discerning, absolutely, because people take, you know, how many dozens and dozens of pictures to find their best picture that they want to put on Instagram. And it's, you know, what saddens me is that teenagers and young people, even anybody, look at this, kind of representation of life, and it isn't real life. So, you know, we are talking about opening up the conversation to what it is to be really human and to live an authentic life and experience the richness of all of our emotions, because each one has a message for us. Each one is valuable. And to think that we, you know, keep calm and carry on and put a smile on your face and go forward, you know, that doesn't serve us in the long run. We really need to access the wealth within all of our emotions.
Thank you, Randy. So if our previous definition, my previous definition of happiness used to be, if I can control enough aspects of my life that I don't have any major problems, I'll be okay, and then I can be happy. So what is your definition of happiness based on all of the research and interviews you've conducted?
Well, happiness has to do with emotional resiliency. When we can cultivate the conditions to develop our emotional resiliency, then we have more ability to bounce back and to actually live a happier life. So happiness, I love the Gandhi definition. It's if I remember correctly, it's when we talk. I forget the words, but we are aligned in what we say, what we do, what we feel. So there is an alignment there. And happiness does not mean that, you know, we never experience so-called negative emotions, but we just have the resilience to return back to a more solid place where we can call on our inner reserves. That's what keeps us afloat and happy.
So I'm curious, how is your teenager doing now with all the work that you've done? I'm assuming that your child is no longer a teenager.
Yes, for sure not. Doing very well, and finding her own path, you know, which is really, I think, a precondition for happiness, for real happiness, is being true to yourself and finding your own expression. I believe that everyone comes in with a spark, and you know, and the idea is to express that essence and share it with others. And I'm happy to say that all my children are doing that right now, and that's my wish for everyone.
Beautifully said. So, Randy, I'd love to go over some of the emotions that you cover in your book. There's happiness, sadness. One of the big ones is desire. That one is intriguing to me because I often find that the more that I desire something, the more negative I feel. So can we talk a little bit about desire?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that chapter because desire, there's something called the cycle of desire. And that's exactly, I think, what you were referring to, because when we want something and crave something, we have to have it. Let's say there's, you know, what would it be? What is it for you, Marie? What is one thing that you might desire?
Okay, well, I'll use an example. I stick normally to a very low carb way of eating. I eat ketogenic, and I kind of, when I go out with people, I often feel like I'm missing out on some of the more junky food that they're eating. So this past weekend, I let myself have a cheat day. And so in the desire for all of these sweet treats, like ice cream and cookies and potato chips, I ended up having all of them. And number one, they didn't taste nearly, I mean, of course, they tasted good, but not to that level of longing that I had been anticipating of how good they would taste. And I ended up feeling kind of hungover from all of the inflammatory stuff that I was putting in my body.
Right. So I'd say maybe you're a fine-tuned machine, I think, because it sounds like you have your practice and what your body likes and enjoys. But sometimes our mind has this idea of something that we want and we have to have. So whether it's chocolate or that new phone or new pair of shoes or whatever it might be, we think about it, we ruminate on it, we want it, and then we finally satisfy that desire, and we feel very happy in that moment. Oh, finally, yes, this is so good. But after a little while, as you discover, that happiness fades, you know, it's over. And then in the cycle of desire, you want something else, like maybe there's a newer gadget out, or the chocolate leads to, oh, I need to have more. That's when we're caught up in that sugar cycle. So that's one aspect of desire, the cycle of desire. And, you know, that has to do with the craving and so on. But desire is also a very powerful force. It's almost a primal force because it gives fuel to our dreams. So there's that whole other aspect of desire. And some, you know, religions and some philosophies would say don't have desire because it's, you know, you should be have equanimity and not want for anything. But I don't know if I agree with that. I think that desire is a fuel that really gives one the energy to pursue a dream. You know, if you think about it, if it keeps you up at night, as Project Happiness did for me when I started this, you know, that's something that it can be your soul that is calling you to realize a certain aspect of yourself that hasn't come to the surface yet. So that's another way of looking at desire.
So it sounds like it can be very energizing.
It can be. And then we can talk about passion. So passion is notches it up even a little bit more, sometimes a lot more. And then there's the idea of harmonious passion, which enhances your life. But there's too extreme. There is obsessive passion. And that's ends up controlling you and monopolizing your time and your life. It can deplete your energy and make you run down if you go like all out into that one thing at the expense of relationships and quality of life.
So that's kind of like the difference between having something that you're passionate about in your work and yet still having a full life with your family, friends, and hobbies.
So, yeah.
And the difference between someone who's a workaholic or someone who's enjoying lovely food, or the difference between that and a person who eats carbs all weekend like I did and then feels terrible.
Hey, you got to do it. Hey, self-compassion, Marie. Compassion, right? We all do it sometimes, you know, and that's part of being human and all that too. But to your example, another one is like an athlete. You know, some will train and they know when their body is getting tired or maxed out, and some will overtrain, and that's when they have injuries and pull ligaments and have this long recovery. So yeah, it's just striving for some sort of attention to all the sectors in our life.
Thursday, July 18th at Lanelou's, Montreal's Orchestre Criminal come to Vancouver for an evening of klezmer punk, turbo folk, and ancient gangster tunes from around the world. That's Thursday, July 18th at Lanelou's, Montreal's Orchestre Criminal with local favorites, Balkan Schmalkin. Tickets are $12 in advance at brownpapertickets.com, $15 at the door. Co-presentation of Discorder Magazine and CITR 101.9 FM.
Are speaking right now with Randy Terran. She is the author of Emotional Advantage, Embracing All Your Feelings to Create a Life You Love. And she's also the creator of Project Happiness. You can find her at projecthappiness.org. So we talked a little bit about happiness and desire. What do you feel like is one of the more underrated emotions that needs to be addressed?
I think anger is something that anger can get very bad rap, and there is a good reason for it, because anger, you know, used let's say unskillfully, I mean, it can take us on a very wild ride. Anger can, it can feel like we're torching the room and everyone who is in our path. But the downside of suppressing anger, that's not a good idea either, because anger suppressed can turn into a sort of depression. So it's really important to express anger, but it can be done, as I said, in a more skillful way. And, you know, we just have to look at, you know, Martin Luther King or Gandhi, the suffragettes, Black Lives Matter today. I mean, there are so many groups that, had they not harnessed the power within their anger and used it, I have to say, nonviolently, skillfully, we would not be where we are today. So anger has a potency. Also, it's good in creating boundaries, because look at the situation. Let's say, I mean, what comes to mind is, let's say, a woman, or it could be a man in an abusive relationship, right? Mm-hmm. If they did not have that sense that, you know, something is wrong, I can't do this anymore, tapping into that anger, you know, they need that to create a healthier boundary. So anger is really important. It is a signal for us.
So, and anger is another one of those emotions that is quite energizing. What does, you talk about using anger effectively or expressing anger effectively. What does that look like?
Well, Dr. Dan Siegel has an expression which I absolutely love. It's called name it to tame it. So imagine that there are degrees of anger. So it can go from mild irritation to annoyance to being pissed off to fuming. And then we get into the white hot rage category, where you have no access to your rational mind at all. And there's a reason for it. The area in the brain called the amygdala just, you know, lights up. That's fight, flight, or freeze. And that amygdala is taking charge and really dislocating the presence of the prefrontal cortex, which can soothe the amygdala and just be a more organizing force. But that isn't available in the heat of anger. So one way to deal with anger is to imagine that it is like a car, like you're riding the gas pedal of anger. So where are you? Are you at 35? You know, irritation? Are you at 60, you know, more angry? Or are you at 80 or 90 where you're just, you know, fuming? And then imagine yourself putting the brake. So first it's identifying it, and then you put the brake on your emotion. And that along with the breath is so powerful. You know, when the exhale is longer than the inhale, that actually engages our parasympathetic nervous system and it calms us down. So if we can take some longer inhales and even longer exhales, we can actually slow down the car and just imagine ourselves coming back to a safe speed, you know. So that's just one way of doing it. And another idea is to imagine your anger in a box in front of you. So therefore, you're not merged with that anger. You're more looking at it. And what number would you give it? Is it at a 10? Is it at a 7? Is it at a 5? You know, and then you know, all of these are techniques to bring down the level of your anger, or else just disengage. If you know that this is going nowhere, we're both upset, we're going to blow up at each other, this is not going to work, you know, take the idea, the strategy of, hey, you know, I need some time, you know, let's talk together when we're both a little bit more calm. So lots of ways to be more skillful. And I wanted to introduce the idea of forgiveness as well, if you think that's an interesting direction to go.
Sure, yeah.
Okay, so there's a story of a woman whose son, 16-year-old son, was killed at a party. And the killer happened to be another young boy who was there with a gun And he, you know, he killed this other young boy. So he was taken to prison. The mother was devastated. And this is a true story. And of course, she had, you know, intense anger and was bitter and hatred against this boy. And she didn't know how to handle it. One thing she did realize was that this was eating her alive, you know? At the time, she said, her name was Mary Johnson, I wanted justice. He, the killer, was an animal. He deserved to be caged. But later on, you know, as she was consumed by the anger, she said, I've got to do something else. Unforgiveness is like a cancer. It'll eat you from the inside out. And it's not about that other person. Me forgiving him does not diminish what he's done. Yes, he murdered my son, but the forgiveness is for me. So she started visiting him in prison, and it turned into, you know, okay, let's be civil, I'll be curious. And then that curiosity turned into caring, so much so that when this boy, young man at the time, was being released, he had no place to go. He had no family. And Mary offered him, I will try and find a place in my building where you can stay, you know, a room to rent. And it turned out that he did get an apartment in her building. And now he's working at a recycling plant by day and going to college at night, determined to give back and to live up to the potential that Mary saw in him. And he speaks about forgiveness to crowds in community centers and churches. And what touches me the most is that Mary now wears a necklace with a picture of her son on one side and this young man, O'Shea, on the other. And she calls him her spiritual son. And oh my gosh, if she can forgive that, it's amazing. It makes me think that we can tap into our forgiveness as well.
Hmm. That's a beautiful story. Thanks, Randy. And I also don't want to discount, because I think that in our culture of let's only feel good emotions, I think we are often really quick to try and force people to jump to forgiveness prematurely.
Yeah, and that's not good either. Exactly. And that can make the situation worse. So forgiveness is, you know, it's not about saying that what the other person did was okay. It's really giving yourself the freedom to move on. And as you said, when you are ready, when it's a journey.
Creative BC and the City of Vancouver have announced the Vancouver Music Fund to elevate the voices of Indigenous and underrepresented artists and groups. Apply for funding to create demo recordings, music videos, and industry development projects. Learn more at creativebc.com and apply now until July 24th. Get your applications in today.
There was a penguin sliding on an iceberg, and then the fiery ice cracked, and the penguin sees Donald Trump and feels numb and dies. Donald Trump hops into a balloon and floats away. A child sees him and says, look, something ugly is in a balloon. The end.
Are you a kid with a story to tell?
Want to learn how to make great radio?
Then sign up for CITR's
Kids Radio Camp!
On-air training,
games,
field trips,
and more! Happening this summer from July 15th to 19th.
Kids aged 11 to 14 are welcome.
To register, go to citr.ca.
We are speaking right now with Randy Terran. She is the author of Emotional Advantage, Embracing All Your Feelings to Create a Life That You Love. And you can find her at projecthappiness.org. So we talked about anger and forgiveness. We've talked about desire. I'd like to talk a little bit about guilt and shame, if you're comfortable with that.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Guilt and shame. You know, they're related to one another, but they are different. Guilt is valuable in that it brings us back to our core values. So let's use the example of, let's say you're, you know, in a coffee shop with friends, and they are just gossiping about another friend, and you happen to know that they, you know, are going through a difficult time, and this gossip is completely unfounded, but maybe you go along with it because, you know, everyone wants to be part of a group, but later on you feel bad. You know, this is not being true to yourself. And, you know, you want to do something about that feeling. And that's a message from you to you, that you know, that's not who you are, and you want to go back to your core values. So the solution there is to make amends and just say that you are sorry, but in a way that is sincere, that is true. We go through the idea of, you know, how to make an apology that really will touch another person. And that said, that when we do our best to apologize to someone, having been in that situation, just know that you cannot guarantee how the other person will react to that. You know, you cannot necessarily have the outcome that you desire, but just knowing that you have done your best really, you know, makes a difference, and that should lighten your heart. So guilt says, I made a mistake, but shame says, I am a mistake. Mm-hmm. Very different. One is on, you know, the action level or behavior level, and the other one is on an identity level. I am a mistake. So guilt says, I recognize my behavior was wrong, but shame says others can see through to my core flaws. It's almost like feeling like everyone can see how bad I really am, you know, inside. And guilt, you feel remorse for your actions, but shame, you know, I feel bitter and I blame others. And where guilt allows you to reach out to others and look for solution, shame says, this is my business. It is a secret, you know, none of your business. And often people experiencing shame, which I have to say we all do from time to time in our lives, and we don't talk about it. And often that's when, you know, there are the self-soothing behavior, whatever it might be, from, you know, food to shopping to Netflix to addictions of any kind. So the more we can talk about these emotions, the more helpful it is to raise them to the surface, you know, to come up for healing. I really think so.
Thanks, Randy. And that is something that's really frustrating, is when people do go into shame, because a lot of times someone will do something, like we could use the extreme example of this teenager who murdered the other boy at the party. He has gone on through the support of the victim's mother and the forgiveness she was able to give him, he was able to say, okay, now because of the guilt of what I did, I now want to go on and make better, you know, make more of myself and give back and make up for the deeds that I'd done. But he could have just as easily been stuck in shame of, I'm a murderer, I'm a bad person. And all that does is create more to be ashamed about and not doing anything. Like, the people who are stuck in shame don't tend to actually do anything to make amends for to the people that they've hurt.
Yeah, beautifully said. Absolutely. And they make themselves feel worse and worse and lower and lower and despising themselves. And even if, you know, it's hard for sometimes for others to reach out and connect with someone who is in a shame spiral, you know, because they don't want to be, they don't want to be helped. Now, Mary was able to, over time, show that she cared, and that, you know, that probably brought O'Shea out of his shame, just to know that, you know, someone was out there. He could have a conversation. They didn't see him that way, and maybe that helped him not see himself that way. And that's why it's so important to reach out and get some help, even if it's not the first thing that a person wants to do. There is help out there, and you know, we have in the States, we have this opioid addiction right here, and there's a lot of shame that is tied up with that, you know. Mm-hmm. So many other things as well, but just knowing what our triggers are, you know, is really important. What makes us feel shame, you know? There's a whole conversation about not feeling good enough, which is prevalent in our society. Who doesn't feel that from time to time, you know? So it's important to kind of bust the myth that you should always be strong and you should always perform well and you should make it look easy. That is not real life, you know, and that keeps us feeling inadequate and disempowered. So, you know, it's really important to look at what is triggering the shame also and ask, is that really true?
Thanks, Randy. And one thing I've noticed, I mean, we all do experience shame at different points in our lives and about different things. But I think that it's quite common for people. I know for myself, I've been hurt by people who then feel shame. And what happens is that rather than making amends for what they've done to me, they become the victim of their own shame. Oh, poor me. I'm such a bad person. And therefore they just kind of implode in on themselves rather than giving back, rather than saying, I'm sorry that I've wronged you. It's, oh, I'm so sad and I'm so bad. Now it's all about me rather than making amends. So, and that's incredibly frustrating to be observing. And I'm wondering what tips you have for people who maybe are on the receiving end of something negative, and then the perpetrator of that is stuck in a shame spiral. How do we cope with that so that we don't get sucked in to that?
Yeah. And you notice I'm kind of laughing about that, because it happens all the time, and people get stuck in their own story. And you know, there's, honestly, we can look after ourselves. We can plant the seeds in other people, like, hey, you may not realize it, but you know, you're making this all about yourself. Mm-hmm. And let's look at the situation here. You know, I came with this, you da-da-da, and so on. And it's become a different thing. That's not the way I see it. If you wish to see it that way, that's going to be your choice. But it doesn't have to be that way. I can't decide how you want to feel. I can just, you know, share with you the way that I see things, you know. Mm-hmm. And again, boundaries are really important in a situation like that, because you or anyone does not want to get sucked in to that negative vortex. Sometimes people get very attached to their stories, and you know, that shame might, that situation might be triggered by an earlier childhood something, and that's why it becomes so big for them. And that's not something that you or me or anyone else has control over, you know. It's up to each individual to basically develop, I think, self-awareness. And from that place, which includes embracing all of the feelings and understanding what triggers us and what strategies we can use when these feelings arise, as they will, because it's part of the human condition, you know, how we can learn to navigate our emotions. Like as Jon Kabat-Zinn said, you know, we can't control the waves or something like that, but we can learn how to surf.
Mm, that's beautiful. And I notice that in the shame cycle, I can imagine that, let's say we'll use the example of a couple where one partner has chosen to cheat, or maybe has chosen an addiction over the partner, then that person, so the one partner has been hurt by the person choosing the addiction, and then the person who's choosing the addiction is stuck in shame. So then the hurt party isn't getting what they need from the partner, and then that can turn into their own shame of, well, if I was a better person, if I was more valuable, that person wouldn't have chosen the addiction over me.
Nah, that's where it has. That's about discernment, because people choose what they choose. People choose, you know, I mean, that is their choice. We cannot control what another person chooses in reaction to something. What we can do is invite them to get help, to have a conversation, to bring the issues to light, and talk about it in a more objective way. But this is not something that is, a person is not in charge of another person's way of perceiving the world or the actions that they take. We can plant the seeds for greater awareness. We can have discussions. We can explore these things. We can suggest strategies and suggest, you know, getting help when needed. But it's up to each of us to do the personal work. And I like the idea of two whole people, of course, coming into a relationship together. Rather than one completing the other, for lack of better words, you know? No.
Yeah, no, I see what you're saying. And the more, like you were talking earlier about our own emotional resilience, the more we have strong emotional resilience, the more that we have healthy boundaries. Yes, it might hurt if other people don't behave in the way we would like, but it's not going to hurt us to our core. We're not going to start thinking that we're unworthy of good treatment because someone else has made a mistake.
Right. And what hurts us to our core is when we are not true to ourselves, when we know that something is off and we go along with it, or when we know that we're capable of more, or have dreams, or that there's something that we want to, that calls us, and we don't listen to that. You know, it's really at the end of the day. This might sound harsh, but we come into the world alone, and we end up alone. And it's up to us to, you know, it's the relationships that we remember along the way. So we, rather than achievements and rather than, you know, accolades or whatever. So it's in the development of the relationships that's most important. But the most important relationship is our relationship with ourselves, you know, and that spark within ourselves, that divine connection that lets us know, whether it's intuition or in whispers of the heart or whatever, that lets us know when we are on our path. So in that situation, where one partner sees another going down this vortex and they feel responsible, at a deep level, I think, you know, they would know that that is not really the truth. So I invite, you know, listeners to look at it from that perspective of being true to your core essence, which is actually very, very strong and very, very wise.
Identity Fest is an all-ages, LGBTQ safe space music festival on July 6th. Doors at noon and first band plays at 1 p.m. Come show us your identity and celebrate Vancouver Pride with us. A little heavy in the backseat
of my car. We are speaking right now with Randy Terran. She is the founder and CEO of the global organization Project Happiness. And we're speaking about her latest book today, Emotional Advantage, Embracing All Your Feelings to Create a Life You Love. You can find Randy at projecthappiness.org. And we've been talking about some tough emotions and tough feelings right now. I'm wondering, for the last few minutes of the show, maybe we could focus on something a little more hopeful and uplifting. What do you think is another emotion or subject that you'd like to leave us with?
Well, we can talk about love. We can talk about confidence. We can talk about happiness. You pick.
Okay, let's talk about confidence then.
Okay. So confidence is a really great one. And there are different ways of having confidence. Like when you see somebody come into a room and, you know, with a swagger or some sort of attitude, that doesn't necessarily mean that they are confident. I love the quote by Lao Tzu, because one believes in oneself, one doesn't try to convince others. Because one is content with oneself, one doesn't need others' approval. Because one accepts oneself, the whole world accepts him or her, Lao Tzu. So confidence is an outer reflection of an inner alignment. And the idea is, you know, everyone can access more confidence. You know, it is much more than standing up straight with the shoulders back. It has to do with what turns our thoughts into action. And that's getting through the mental obstacles as well as the challenges to get into action. So, you know, a lot has to do with believing that we can grow. And I adamantly feel this way. There is something and I'm sure you've covered it before, called the growth mindset.
Yes.
Where you approach challenges with curiosity and as a learner, and you don't have to do it perfectly, and just, you know, try it, be curious in life. And that's a real invitation to greater confidence, and try and do something and make it messy and just have fun doing it. Explore your outer rims. This is a growth mindset. And the fixed mindset, in contrast, could be described as your inner meanie, which says, oh, I don't want to do it because I might look foolish, or I won't be good at it, or I might be humiliated, you know? So don't listen to your inner meanie. Listen to your inner friend. And that opens up so many doors.
And it seems like that fixed mindset is what's probably more linked to shame.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. That's very much so. And one antidote for the fixed mindset and for shame is self-compassion. Mm-hmm. And I love the work of Kristin Neff. She breaks it down into three aspects. One is that, you know, being mindful of how you're feeling in the moment. The second one is, hey, I'm human. Everybody feels this way from time to time. You know, I'm not the only person that feels this way or has ever felt this way. Right. And then finally, it is, you know, treat yourself, speak to yourself as you would a good friend. So what would you say to someone who was going through a rough time or who needed a little bit more confidence? You would tell them, you've been through worse. You know, you always make it through. You know, you're going to get through this. Rumi says, you were born with potential. You were born with goodness and trust. You were born with ideals and dreams. You were born with greatness. You were born with wings. You are not meant for crawling, so don't. You have wings. Learn to use them and fly.
And the days that our wings feel broken, that's okay too, because everyone has those days.
Everyone has those days. Don't buy into the media nonsense that you have to be perfect, you know? I really hope within the next short while that we will see a more authentic reflection of real life, of that life is messy, and that, you know, that's just part of it. And if we can learn to laugh at ourselves and laugh at this human experience, then, you know, that's when we can just move on and grow wiser and tap into our resilience and greater happiness, and indeed create a life that we love.
Beautifully said, Randy. We have been speaking with Randy Taran, and she is the author of Emotional Advantage: Embrace All Your Feelings to Create a Life You Love. You can find her at projecthappiness.org. And it sounds like having that inner strength and that inner self compassion is really what gives us the ability to be able to live with all of our emotions and to be that whole person that we really all are longing to be in this world, and to show up as our best selves each day. Randy, is there anything else that you'd like to add before we say goodbye?
I would just say that each and every one of you is more powerful than you know. You have inner resources beyond what you can imagine. And as you tap into the power, emotions are actually the energy in motion. And if you can tap into that energy and information that goes with it, you will have so much more fuel to understand yourself and actually surf the waves of life and expect the best.
Beautifully said. Thank you so much. Again, Randy's website is projecthappiness.org. The name of the book is Emotional Advantage, Embracing All Your Feelings to Create a Life You Love. This has been Synchronicity. Thank you so much for spending this hour with us. Thank you to Randy. And I want to send you so much love for a wonderful week. Be well. Namaste.
Up next is Parts Unknown with DJ Chris Arific on CITR.
For the best in funk, soul, surf, and more music, tune in to Jack Velvet's Suburban Jungle Show, Wednesday mornings from 8 to 10 at CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. Add us on Twitter at Jack Velvet Radio, Jack Velvet's Suburban Jungle Show. Also available streaming and podcast at jackvelvet.net.
Waves of agony are creeping in my bones. Nerve endings are damaged. Believe me when I say this is the way it's got to be. Ain't no time for tears, girl. It can happen to you just as easy as it got to me. My mistakes daily put me in the loneliest state I could ever be. This is the end shot. I'll never let this happen to anyone again. You can call me human. Is all I really feel anyway. Infested with a virus, attacking every special part, and I just may be searching for answers day to day by the pace I play until I reach my grave.
Of figures less than the angles formed by the ratio surrounded by pi. Aspiration to have some Andy Warhols on my hall's walls and find that lady to suck on my salty balls. Some say he's notorious, well known around in the jazz dip, tighter than Diggy and Mace. I don't get up early for less than around an hour. I'll be on time late about an hour. Mediocre, mediocre, almost in the limelight, but not quite. No snaps on your IG story.
Like a lot of the Sean Carter, we gotta be getting old. Ancient every battle in Calgary, you've been involved. You still don't understand if I'm like me. Get enrolled in the school of soft hats. All hats is off with Professor Popeye's spinach steps and rooms. Hear me, hear me. In my throat, give up.
You're listening to 101.9 CITR. This is the Parts Unknown Show.
C-A-N-A-D-A. Tell me, what's a Douglas fir?